Welcome to the Dave and Danger Show, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is a show about independent and old school pro wrestling, featuring current events, interviews, and whatever else they decide to talk about. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents the Dave and Danger Show with your hosts, Dave Wills and Mark Danger.
All right, welcome to the Dave and Danger Show. Always a great, exciting time here on the Dave and Danger Show, broadcast live through the megalopolis of Acworth, Georgia. I'm Dave Wills. Very soon to be joined by my, unique, to say the least, co-host, beloved icon, Mark. Get over here toward the speaker. You don't need to be yelling across the room.
Danger!
Beloved icon, Mark Danger, my wonderful co-host. Danger, say something to the people.
Hello to the something the people, the great people of America. President Danger speaking. I want my fellow people to know I will not raise taxes.
You are not Obama. Give me that phone. You are not Obama. Give me that phone. And by the way, you tuned in. We're going to have a great guest tonight. Believe me, if you've not watched the State of the Union, hit mute, hit the closed caption. You can still tune in if you want to hear that. Or they'll have it all over Fox, CNN, HLN. Everything else tomorrow, so you might as well listen to some great talk about wrestling. We got one heck of a guest tonight, a guy who's been around everywhere, anywhere. He has been in WCW, WWE, USWA, some Smoky Mountain. Yes, Danger, what?
The closed caption is of a person bending over and getting
in. No. Remember that the opinions of Mark Danger are the opinions of Mark Danger. And they do not any way, shape, or form resemble that of an actual person, an informed person, anyone who listens to politics, or anyone who might tune in to this show or any shows anywhere. Danger has a problem. I don't know what he has, but he trusts me, he has a problem. Anyways, let's see here. What all we got going on? I was getting back to our guest tonight. He's been anywhere, everywhere, and anywhere. He is the great, the wonderful, the talented, the superb, and I think we got a caller on the air now who may be him. He is, without a doubt, Reno Riggins, who we're going to get to very shortly, and everything. Get the interview going on the way. Real quick, or you get a quick housekeeping notes out of the way. The next show, of course, is next week, February 1st. Want to give you a special announcement. A guy who hasn't done a lot of interviews at all in the last 18 to 20 years is going to be on our show. He is a fixture in the CWF, I should say, our Continental Wrestling, was in Mid-South, CWA, USA Championship Wrestling. He is what you might say a wildcat. Wildcat Wendell Cooley comes to the Dave and Danger Show next week, and we're so happy to have him on the show. We're so happy that he has agreed to come on next week. So be sure not to miss next week's show with Wildcat Wendell Cooley. But enough of that. Let's get to one of our callers. I believe it's our guest, as a matter of fact. 615 area code. You're on the Dave and Danger Show. Hello. Is this Reno Riggins? Hello? Hello. Hello. 615 area code. You're on there. It is not Reno Riggins. That's okay. We have his number. We'll call him now. Getting to that, as a matter of fact, it's going to be one heck of a show next week. Going to be a heck of a show tonight. Let me see if we can get Reno on the line real quick and get that going where we can keep y'all entertained. As always, MGCW, I believe their show is at the end of... Wait a minute here. I dropped the phone there. I think MGCW has a... They haven't given a date yet. I thought it was at the end of... I'm not sure. We'll get back with a date in MGCW. I do know, however... that we have WWA 4 action on, let's see, tomorrow night that's going to be some great action. So you definitely want to tune into that. Do what, Danger?
One of the Hall of Heroes has been announced. Greg Price announced that Gordon Solie will be inducted in the Hall of Heroes.
Hall of Heroes, that's the show that happens every time at Greg Price's Fan Fest, NWALegends.com. It's been in Charlotte, North Carolina for a while. It's coming to Atlanta, so you would definitely want to tune in and hear more about that. You can hear more of that at NWALegends.com. Let me take this call here. David Danger Show, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. Got a problem here. Let's see here. Well, we'll do this here. Anyways, Danger, what else is on your mind today?
There's nothing on. I've always had things on my mind. Yes. One, I am Danger.
Yes.
Two, I am good looking. But I was asked by a mutual friend of ours. There is a charity auction that's happening to help a little girl go to Europe to be an ambassador for America in Europe. This person is actually auctioning off a pair of tights, ring-worn tights, by a famous wrestler, and...
Where's this at? Where's your...
It is item number... It's on eBay. Item number is 23...
Wait a minute here. Just what is it? It's eBay item number what? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The eBay item number is 23057800238. That is where you can get a As Seen on TV Nigel Sheridan tights. The proceeds benefit for a girl to go to Europe for this summer to be an ambassador. Great cause.
Fantastic here. Let me see if I can get this right here. Hello, David Danger Show. Is this Reno? Let's try that one more time here. Hello, is this Reno? Hello. We may be having a little problem here in the screen room here. Let's see what we got here. David Danger Show, hello. Go ahead, you're on the air, 615 area code.
Hello?
Hey, is this Reno? Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Hey, is this Reno Riggins?
This is Reno.
All right, Reno, sorry about that. Let me give you a proper introduction right now. Let me get that. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we're proud to have him. He's been around everywhere and wrestled all over the place, from Smoky Mountain to the USWA to WWE, WWF, WCW, Music City. He's wrestled everywhere. USWA, the list goes on and on across continents, countries, and everything. Let's give a big round of applause to one Reno Riggins. All right, welcome to the show, Reno.
That was a great intro. I really appreciate that.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you on the show and everything. Real quick, for some of our fans who may not be as familiar with you as we are, how did you get into this crazy thing called wrestling, and what influenced you? Any wrestlers influenced you to get in there? You watched on TV?
I grew up here in Nashville, Tennessee. And, I mean, this dates all the way back to kindergarten. Each day at the playground, you know, all the boys would get together and want a rough house and fight and carry on. And, of course, they all wanted to take the persona of their favorite, you know, wrestler. And I was always Jackie Fargo. That was my persona when I was in kindergarten. And, you know, each weekend, you know, we would watch, I mean, the whole family would gather around and we'd watch television, of course, you know, professional wrestling. I had a uncle of mine who was just an enormous wrestling fan, and my grandmother, she didn't enjoy it, but my grandfather did, and I had an aunt that enjoyed it, and so we would gather around the TV, and, you know, that was the thing to do on Saturdays. We would watch professional wrestling, and it was kind of instilled in me from the time I was really young, and then I think that was kind of the thing that kind of got me involved with playing athletics. I had grew up playing baseball, basketball, and football, and had an opportunity to play football at Auburn, and I decided to pass that up. Thought, well, if I'm good enough to get a scholarship from Auburn and a few other small schools, I thought, well, you know what, I'm good enough to walk on up at UT and you know, wear the big orange and you know, be a volunteer. But if you're not already figured in their plans, then they have other plans for you. And I was a good player, but I wasn't going to be an NFL caliber type player. And I think I should have been that type of player if I was going to make that transition from just walking on and hoping to earn a scholarship at that point. So when reality sort of set in, you know, on me with that, I thought, well, you know, what else can I do athletically that I enjoy doing and think that I might be good at? And one day we were just sitting around the dorm, and there was a magazine, you know, Sports Illustrated and all these others. But actually, at the time, there was one with on the cover that said America's highest paid professional athlete, Hulk Hogan. And
wow.
I said, you know what? I said, I think I can do that. So without my parents' notice, I packed up that night and came back home. And showed up the next day, which they was wondering what I was doing at home. And I said, you know what? I figured out what I want to do. And they said, well, you know, what is that? You want to go into med school or you want to do this? You know, I said, I want to be a professional wrestler. And they both just, you know, awkward silence just went on forever, it seemed like. But my dad said, well, if you're going to do that, you know, give it your best. And so from that point on, really, a lot of people think that their parents would have really hassled them or gave them a hard time. But both of my parents were very supportive, and they were very supportive, you know, basically anything I'd, you know, done, as long as it was legal and moral and honest, I guess.
Were they fans as well?
You know, they were casual fans. They weren't, you know, oh, my God, I got to get home in time to watch, you know, TBS wrestling, Georgia Championship Wrestling, or the Memphis program. They weren't that way, but if we were all sitting around watching, they'd sit down and watch with me, you know. But they, you know, I'm an only child, and I'm very loved by my parents. At least I think I am, and so they're very supportive. They're very supportive.
Very nice.
And,
very nice.
So
Go ahead.
I was hanging out down at the fairgrounds trying to talk to somebody about who I needed to talk to about becoming a pro wrestler. And Jeff Jarrett and I went to high schools here in Nashville. We went to different high schools, but I knew that his dad, Jerry Jarrett, owned the wrestling company, and Jeff and I are the same age. And he started refereeing and started wrestling, and I thought, you know, that's something that I thought, if he could do it, I could do it. And so I go down there, and I'm trying to talk with some people about becoming, you know, and of course, you know, getting in the wrestling industry then was a lot tougher than today. It seems like any Yahoo in America can they've got a ring, they can get in there and call themselves a professional wrestler, you know. And just because you have a pair of boots and a set of tights, and nowadays don't even have to have that, and they call themselves professional wrestlers, but they are so far from the truth, it's absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, I'd end up meeting up with Tojo Yamamoto, and Tojo, I hounded him for months to please let me come train. He had a training school in Nashville every Sunday, and it started at about 6 in the morning, and it ended up about 12 or 1 that day, depending on what kind of mood he was in. And so he finally let me come, and me and a friend of mine that I went to high school with, we were going to be a tag team. We were going to be the Grave Diggers. We thought, man, we got this great gimmick. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Well, so we go and train that first day. And, man, it was pretty tough. Tojo actually tried to just run us off. I mean, the first thing he told me when I got there was, he said, get a trash can and bring it to every corner of the building. And so I did that, and I looked at him, and I said, well, what's that for? He says, I don't want you throwing up on the floor. So then he proceeded to run us till our tongues fell out of our heads. And, gave us just a bunch of drills. And I had never been through anything like that in my life. I was so sore. I thought, my goodness, I thought I was in really good shape. I was a football player. I thought, man, I should have been able to do this. So the next week, I showed up. Tojo looked sort of surprised. He says, where's your friend? I said, well, he said he's going to be here. But my friend stiffed me. My friend didn't come. And so it was just me. And I tell you what, one of the guys that really I owe my whole career to, he was one of the trainees at the time. The guy's name was Kevin Ashebrenner, and he lives in Burns, Tennessee. And he wrestled under the name Kevin McQueen. And he probably had maybe 5 or 6 professional matches. But I tell you, he was probably one of the best athletes I'd ever been in the ring with. And he, got into the wrestling business, had about 5 or 6 matches, and realized he just wasn't for him. But every day, that we would go and train, he was the one that basically helped me and molded me. Tojo was giving us the meat and potatoes of it, but it was Kevin Ashebrenner that really molded me into being able to get in there and perform. And I really owe my whole career to that guy. And at that time, there was guys coming in and out of the area to train with Tojo. He'd have guys drive from Louisville, Cincinnati, Memphis, Birmingham, Georgia. It was crazy. And some of the guys that were in there was a guy named Tony Burton, who ended up working in Memphis for a little while as the Ninja.
Sure.
And I ended up getting him booked later on in New York. He was just coming up as a hired hand, but he was a good hired hand. And Sid Vicious, of course, who went on to world-renowned fame, he was a trainee out of that school. He was there a couple of months, and then he took off, and he was gone. Probably after that, I didn't see him again until a few years down the road, I think when I was working in WCW. But so Tojo trained me, and it wasn't like these days where guys, will work out with somebody for 6 months, and okay, you're ready, I've got your money, go get them. I was there with Tojo for 2 years before I had a professional match. Now, that either says that I was thoroughly trained or I'm a slow learner. I don't know which one it was. But it was one of the two. I like to think I was thoroughly trained. But,
there you go.
Yeah, I may just been a slow learner. But I trained with Tojo, and Tojo, he got me, started getting me booked in these little independent towns here around Middle Tennessee and Kentucky and Georgia and Alabama. But the first promoter I ever worked for was a legendary promoter by the name of Nick Gulas.
Oh, boy.
And, Nick Gulas, at this time, his day in the sunshine had already come and gone. And he was just kind of running a few things just to really have something to do. His career, his promotion was pretty much over at this point. But it was kind of neat to sit in the car with Nick and Tojo and listen to them talk about, the good old days and who did what and who shot John and that type of thing. So, I mean, for some people, they would have paid, an arm and a leg just for that experience. And so It was given to me, and I really appreciated that because I felt like things like that are the things that helped me down the road. I mean, things like honor and respect and being able to know the business a little bit. Some guys, now are just – they don't even care nothing about wrestling from what I understand, and they're just, hey, this guy's got a certain look. Let's try to mold him into a wrestling. I mean, mold him into a wrestler. And I feel like wrestling is something that comes from the heart. If it's not in your heart to do, then you're forcing the issue, and you're going to suck at it. You know, I mean, you have to love it. You have to love to do all the crazy things that wrestlers do, and you know, do the things under pressure that you have to do, and because if you don't, if you're having to force the issue, then it's going to be a long, rough, winding road for you.
Well, I think you may be right. I believe some of the bigger promotions even nowadays are looking for certain physiques and certain muscularity and stuff like that, and a little less of the heart. Going in there and wrestling around Tennessee, how in the world did you get to, and you're talking about wrestling for Nick Gulas, now that was in South Alabama, was it not?
Well, you know, actually, yeah, Nick was actually trying to promote around here in Middle Tennessee, but he had teamed up with a group out of Pensacola, Florida, Rip Tyler, Bob Sweetan, and a couple of other guys that I think had money involved with it. It's an organization called WOW, and they taped that down in Pensacola, Florida, and, you know, they had a very unique crew. Of course, I was as green as grass, so my contribution was very minimal, but they had Bob Holly was their champion. They had Yokozuna was there as Kokina, Jerry Stubbs, Mr. Wrestling, Pat Rose, Ken Timms, Bert Prentice was on commentary with Gino Sannazzaro. I mean, it was a pretty had a little talent in that crew, you know. It wasn't bad at all.
Definitely an eclectic bunch, just to say the least, no doubt about that.
Exactly. So we would go down there and tape the program, and of course they would bicycle the show up here to Nashville, and then Nick would run off the television the towns in surrounding the Middle Tennessee area.
Understand. Where else did you wrestle when you were just first starting out and everything? And how in the world did you end up with WWE eventually?
Well, I was really trying to get on with Memphis. I knew Jeff. I just knew of him, and he just kind of knew of me. And we didn't really have a friendship or really know one another. But I was really trying to get on there, and just to no avail. And so I just started working all these little independent, I was working with all these independent promoters. I mean, one night I would get up and drive to Florida and wrestle and turn around and drive back because I had to be at work the next day. And so that was rough at times. And, I'd wrestle. Rip Rogers would have an annual event up there in Seymour, Indiana at his high school. And I would work on that for Rip. And then any promoter within, 500 miles, I would go and wrestle for. And I did that for a couple of years. And I thought, you know what, I'm not making any money. I'm getting the crap kicked out of me. And, you know, what happens is you start, you kind of go through a phase that, I've got to learn this. And then you start to get a little comfortable with what you're doing. And so then after you get a little comfortable, then you start thinking, well, you know what, I'm pretty good at this, you know. That's not always the case sometimes. Sometimes that's a false premonition, but then you start thinking, well, I'm pretty good at this. I ought to be doing that. So I was really pressing, trying to get on with WWF, because I knew if I was going to make any money, that's where I had to be. And so
stopping right there just for a second. When you're going all this 500 miles, if you don't mind me asking, I know there's a lot of wrestlers now who some have somewhat opinions of themselves and everything, and they, a lot of them don't realize what exactly kind of payoffs were you getting for going these 500 miles and stuff like that.
Well, let me go ahead and set the table with this one right here.
Okay.
I either really wanted to do this or I was really stupid, one of the two. Probably a combination of the both. I would drive to Pensacola, Florida, tape television, and turn around and drive all the way back so I could be at work the next day for zero pay.
Mm-mm-mm. You had to want it, no doubt about it.
Yeah, Nashville to Pensacola, that's about a 8.5-9 hour drive one way. And so, I warned it. And then, of course, you know, I would drive to Arkansas for, you know, $30-$40. You know, drive to Indianapolis for $50. I would drive to Atlanta, Georgia for $20. You know, whatever I could, if I could make gas money. Because one thing was, you know, I'm trying to get my name out there is one. I'm trying to gain more experience. Everywhere I went, I tried to learn something, whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, from the experience that night. You know, you never know. You might meet somebody that, hey, I might, you know, run into that guy a couple years down the road, and he might be in a position of power. That's something I didn't realize until real late in my career. But it was always still there in my mind. All the guys that I met, you know, never did anything for the most part. One night, back then it was WWF, of course. They was coming to the Nashville Municipal Auditorium. That's where, at the time, that was the big arena in Nashville, seat about 10,000 people. Of course, it sold out, you know, within a matter of minutes. Well, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to march myself down there. I kind of been around a little bit, so I figured I could just weasel my way into the back locker room area and get back there and talk to somebody that, you know, talk to somebody at least just trying to get on, you know, just do a job or something, you know. Just let them see me, let them know who I was. That was my main purpose that night. So I'd been working with my dad at my dad's had an auto paint and body shop since I was a kid. So I was working there with him. And so that night I went home, took a shower, put on a suit, and drove down to the Municipal Auditorium and thought, I'm just going to strut right on in there and talk to Vince McMahon and let him know I'm going to be his next world champion. And so I get to the security door, and the guy tells me, he says, you're not on the card. You can't get in. I says, you don't understand. I says, I'm here to talk to Vince. And he goes, no, I can't help you. So, bam, I'm rejected. I come back to my car, and I'm sitting there just stewing over it. I go, I got to get in there. Well, earlier that day at our shop, we'd had a FedEx delivery, and so I had the package in the car for some reason. It was just the empty box. So I grabbed it and threw it under my arm and went to another, you know, entry. And the security guy stopped me, and I said, hey, I've got a FedEx delivery for Vince McMahon. He goes, well, I'll give it to him. And I says, no. He's got a sign for it. Now, here I am in a suit and tie with a FedEx box, no pen, no clipboard, and nothing. Telling this guy's got a sign for it. He goes, okay, well, come on in. So he lets me in. So I finally get back here. I ditch the box, and I'm looking around. So I go up to a couple of guys. I go, who do I need to talk to about getting a job here? Well, go see that guy. Well, go see this guy. Go see that guy. Go see that. So about an hour of getting passed around to everybody, I'm standing there just thinking, they're on to me, you know, and nobody's talking to me, you know. And, you know, I'm seeing all the big wrestling stars walk back and forth. And for me, it was kind of funny because I kind of felt like, sometimes, you know, I mean, you can get that star struck, you know, it's just natural. But I was kind of, you know, tingling a little bit, but I wasn't overwhelmed with it. And I kind of had that feeling like I belong type of thing. Just some reason just kind of came over me. And, well, so the vice president at the time, Terry Garvin of WWE, he sees me standing, and he comes up to me and says, can I help you? I says, yes. So I'm trying to find out who I need to talk to about getting a job with this company. And I said, I've talked to a few guys, but nobody seems to know who the boss is. And he said, well, how long have you been wrestling? I said, 2 years. He said, well, okay. He said, well, who broke you in? Who trained you? I said, Tojo Yamamoto. So he stood there for a second, looked at me, and he said, really? I said, yeah, like he didn't believe me. I said, yeah, Tojo trained me. He said, okay. He said, well, Tojo used to be my roommate in Canada. And I tell you what, kid. He says, tomorrow night we're going to be in Bristol, Tennessee at Viking Hall. You be there at 2 o'clock, and we'll see what you can do. Really? He said, yeah. He said, we'll even pay you money. And so I said, man, this is great. So I darted out of there, went home, packed my bag, jumped up the next morning, drove to Bristol, Tennessee. I get there, they feed me a great lunch there, and I'm getting at 2 o'clock. I'm getting ready for a match at about 9 o'clock. But anyway, they you know takes me in there, introduces me to Ray Hernandez, Hercules Hernandez. And he was, I'm telling you, Ray was a super guy, loved him to death. Came back here and says, look, he says, they just wanted to take just a quick look at you. We're only going to be out there 4 or 5 minutes. He says, Bobby Heenan's going to be out there with us, you know, and he says, it'll be real easy. You know, he says, I'm a little intense out there, but he says, don't get worried. I said, well, all right. You know, and at the time I was a young buck, you know, I felt like I was in tremendous shape. And of course he looked like a Greek god. I'm standing there looking at this guy. And so, you know, I go out
there. Real Hercules.
Yeah, he was a real Hercules. And so I get out there and, you know, I'm looking around. I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is the most people I've ever been in front of in my life for anything, you know. And I said, wow. And, so we had, you know, kind of, you know, had, well, went over our match a little bit. So I'm standing, and I'm feeling pretty confident. I'm going, man, I'm getting ready to show these cats what I can do, right? Well, they're playing his music, the light's going, and here he comes down, and I'm looking down that aisle, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, that is not the same nice man I was talking to in the back. I am in trouble. He got in there and proceeded to beat the living daylights out of me. I've been in better street fights, let me tell you. And he actually clotheslined me, and I went down and hit my head against the mat. I was on my feet, but I was out. I didn't know where I was. So, you know, the bell rings, match is over. I go back to the back, and I'm in a fog right now. I mean, I'm in a daze. And so I get back there, and he comes back there, and he goes, how you doing, kid? I said, I think I'm fine. I said, is it over? He says, yeah. And he started laughing, and Bobby Heenan came up, shook my hand. He says, you did a good job. Terry Garvin came up and said, you're hired. And I said, okay.
Wow.
And that was it. So that was in 88, I think. 88. And
88.
And then after that, you know, I was underneath talent for a long time. A long time I did events and was, you know, I wasn't on TV. And then they started bringing me more and more along television. And I was a babyface. I hated being an undercard babyface talent in the WWF at that time because it was a big man territory. And, you know, me not being 6'5", 300 pounds, I was just a good throwing weight for guys like Hercules and Rick Rude and Greg Valentine and Earthquake and all these other guys. But later on, after being there a few years, they let me turn heel, you know, as a job guy. And I feel like I had more personality to offer than what I was being, you know, given the opportunity to do, but I was grateful for every second there. I had a blast.
What was it like at the time being, I guess you say a job guy for the WWF? I mean, a lot of people look at it and says, he's a jobber and everything. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you said for many years you got a lot of bookings, you got, you know, you were able to do a lot of enhancement talent stuff, you know, with him and everything, and work with some great folks and everything. Any thoughts about that and everything?
Yeah, it was great because I wasn't a featured guy, and so if I had 2 weeks off, say from you know being on the road, and an independent promoter called me and said, hey, could you make this date? They didn't have a problem with me picking up some extra cash. Now, if I was one of their featured guys, they would have had a problem with it. But, you know, I was so far under the radar that, you know, even if I was on an independent card somewhere, you know, it was for them it wasn't a conflict of interest, and they didn't mind me picking up the extra dough. But also, too, what I found to be pretty neat was that here I was, a guy at the time that had never won a match on television, but I would be billed as the biggest star on the card because of television. I was on worldwide television, whereas some of these guys weren't even the biggest star on their street. And so And plus, too, you know, the promoters paid me, and they paid me handsomely for that television exposure that I had. And the thing, you know, about it was is that people, when they come to wrestling, you know, the wrestling is not the thing that makes you the star. You know, it's the television. Television is the vehicle that makes people stars. It makes them elite in other people's eyes. That's not the truth of things, but that's the perception. That's how people are perceived. If they're on television, they're a big wig. They're a big star. They're important. The attention is on them. And that's just, I mean, I was glad of that because my pay went up on independent cards, and I was getting paid. Especially when I went up in the Northeast, I was being paid probably you know, a couple of nights, you know, pay, you know, if I was at WWE. So I was liking that. I was digging it.
Cool. So you see, it did get you quite a bit of bookings on that.
It did. And I tell you, one of the things that I enjoyed out of it that maybe a lot of guys, you know, didn't like, or a lot of guys kind of overlooked, is the travel. You know, I've probably performed in every major city in the United States. I've been to India. I've been to Kuwait. I've been to Saudi Arabia. I've been to Bahrain. I've been to Singapore. I've been to the Philippines. I've been to Hong Kong. I've been to Japan. I've been to Italy. I've been to Germany. I've been all over Canada, Mexico. I mean, I couldn't have in my life growing up and dreamed that I would have had the opportunity to go to all those places. You know, there for a while, I was just, my gig was, I'm being paid to travel and see the world. And that's, I mean, some guys, you know, it may not have been that important to them, but for me, you know, a guy from East Nashville that never thought he would get out of the county, it was a big deal for me.
Absolutely. Guys like yourself and, I guess, Dusty Wolf and a few others really, you know, made a name for yourself, you know, putting over guys, and actually, you know, like you said, got paid, you know, decent money to go around the world and everything. Did you, when you were in WWF, I should say, did you have any major injuries in your career when you were working for them as enhancement talent?
You know, I was working with Bam Bam Bigelow one night, and on an accident, I got my ribs broke. I was working with Rick Rude one night and got two teeth knocked out. Ted DiBiase, of all people, knocked me out with a clothesline. He really caught me with a good clothesline. And I don't know if it necessarily was his fault. Just the way I took the bump, my head, side of my head hit the canvas and knocked me out. And fortunately, that was the towards the end of the match. Cause he put the million-dollar dream on me. It was the million-dollar dream. And you know, I almost choked on the $100 bill. I didn't want to cough that back out. But I had worked with Flash Flanagan one night in the Louisville Gardens, and drop-kicked Flash. He was in the corner, and I drop-kicked him, and his knee came up and hit me in the side of the head and knocked me out, cold in a cucumber. And so I probably had, you know, 10, 11, 12 concussions. And, you know, I broke an ankle. And, you know, back then, well, I don't know how it is today because I'm so out of touch with that company. But back then, if you was hurt and couldn't perform, it was up to them whether or not they thought they should pay you or not. And me being low guy on the totem pole, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, you know what, there's 1,000 guys that would probably cut their testicles off to have my spot. And I said, so with my broken ankle, I just taped it up and went out there and performed on it for about a week until I got to get back home. And then when I got home, I had my doctor look at it, and he put me in a boot. But 2 weeks later, I was back out on the road with a broken leg.
But, wow.
I didn't like I said, you know, I was making more money at the time than probably than I deserved, but I didn't want to jeopardize my financial situation by not being able to go. So, and the thing was, I didn't ever want to be a blip on Vince's radar in a bad way. I didn't ever want to get, and I tell you, Vince McMahon, you know, a lot of people, you hear stories of, oh, I did pay-per-views, and I never got paid for that, or I didn't get paid for this, or da-da-da-da-da-da. When I was there, I got every dime that I deserved. I didn't ever have to beg, borrow, and steal to get paid. And, you know, Vince paid me to do a job, and I did the job. And so I have nothing to complain about. I think Vince McMahon is a business genius. You know, Vince is in a position that, you know, his decisions don't always resonate positively with people because he's in a position of authority. So his decisions are going to make half the people happy and half the people upset, kind of like being the president. And so if you're on the side that his decision doesn't benefit you, you know, you may not be that happy about it. But Vince McMahon gave me a tremendous opportunity, and I'm thankful for that.
Sure. Any thoughts about some of the changes they made, the wellness policy and other things? I've heard talk that they may be looking at, checking on people with concussions later. Any thoughts about some of the changes as far as they made?
Well, I tell you, I'm probably not schooled on that subject enough because, like I said, I don't keep up with their program, and I don't keep up with their product that they put out much these days. I stay in contact with my old buddy Steve Lombardi, and Steve's been there since the beginning of time. I think he actually showed up 3 days before Vince McMahon did. I don't know, but I talk to Lombardi every now and then. We you know, maybe 3 or 4 times a year we'll talk just to check on each other. But as far as any policies that they have or anything like that, I probably wouldn't be educated enough to give an educated opinion, you know, on what they're doing.
Understood. How about this? I hear everybody's got one. Any good Iron Sheik stories?
Any good Iron Sheik stories? Sheiky baby. I love Sheiky baby because, whenever I had the opportunity to work with him on any matches, I was being a cheerleader. You know, he'd come out there, we'd get the USA going, and that was, you know, if we had, in a house show, you know, if we had, you know, 15 minutes, you know, 12 of it was USA, USA, let him get on me a little bit, make a little bit of a comeback, and he was going to screw me on the finish with the feet on the rope. So it was a night off with Sheiky Baby. I loved him. I tell you, I respected him for his accomplishments in the past and who he was in the world of professional wrestling. I hear things about him now that it's kind of upsetting, you know, and people, poke and pry. It's kind of like, you know, sometimes being a caged animal, he's poked and prodded at, you know, and of course, you know, he's going to bite, you know, so it's unfortunate, but I enjoyed my time with him.
The amazing thing with Sheik is he actually, I think one of the biggest shocks to me is, growing up was seeing the Sheik as the hated Iranian heel whenever he winds up in the comedy tour with Howard Stern, of all people, a few years ago. I'm like, you know, it wasn't Howard with it, but it was a lot of his guys. And I'm like, what is this? The Iron Sheik is another one of the biggest baby faces. Well, what's going on here, you know? But what can you do there? You also worked, speaking of Rip Rogers, worked with him in 1990 at Halloween Havoc. Any thoughts? How'd you get on with WCW?
Well, you know, I tell you, I was my dates with New York started to slow down a little bit, and I asked for a release at the time because I was getting booked, but not enough to make a living. And I thought I could pursue other opportunities, other places, and so I did. And I kind of had the WCW thing lined up before I'd left, before I left WWF. And so I went down there. And, of course, I liked my time down at WCW because more of the guys were my size. And there was the emphasis was more on wrestling. You know, you had Ricky Morton, you had Robert Gibson, you had the Midnight Express. These are guys that are, you know, about, you know, close to my height and weight and athleticism. And of course, Ric Flair was there. One of my very first days at WCW, they want me to go 15 minutes with Ric Flair on television. I mean, the thing was, hey, I heard you're pretty good. We're gonna put you there with Flair. Well, you want to talk about getting dry mouthed in a hurry.
Man,
so,
what was that like? What was that like,
know,
facing Flair?
I think, you know, I was too young and too stupid to be nervous or get bent out of shape or worried. I mean, I knew who Ric Flair was. I grew up watching him. It was kind of like, you know, being able to get in there and wrestle, you know, your idol. It's like kind of like being on the pitcher's mound and you're pitching to Babe Ruth. I mean, that's how it felt for me. Now, these guys, they, you know, I was just another, you know, at the time, I was just another job guy, you know, coming along. It was nothing really that special for them. But for me, it was the world. It was like getting to play fantasy camp with the best wrestlers in the world. And so, you know, I just said, you know, just seize the moment. Go out, do the best that you could possibly do. And enjoy it, you know. Take a minute to stop and just soak it in. You know, I think that's what happens a lot of times with us just in life in general. We get so caught up in the rush and the hustle and the bustle of life that we don't stop to, you know, look at what we've accomplished and look at, hey man, this is, I'm in the moment. Let's just enjoy it for a second, you know. And when I was out there with Flair, it was kind of that way. And he surprisingly was, you know, gave me a lot of offense in the match, which I was, you know, ready to get off. You know, as soon as I got out of the ring, I was ready to call all my buddies. Hey, I just had a big old match with Ric Flair, and actually got to chop him. So, you know, it was kind of, you know, it was a lot of fun. The Halloween Havoc thing came about because they was needing some dark matches for Halloween Havoc. And Jody Hamilton had asked Rip Rogers to go get somebody to have a match with for Halloween Havoc. And so I had, like I said, I had worked in the past for Rip, and Rip said, hey, do you want to go do Halloween Havoc? I said, sure. He goes, you want to work with me? I said, yeah, hell yeah, love to work with you. And I always did. I always liked working with Rip because Rip was not lazy. A lot of guys, you know, get in there and just try to do the minimum, but Rip would always work hard, and I respected that of him. And so I knew we was going to have a good match or to the best, you know, of what I could do, because he was eons better than I was at the time, and still is. And So we went out there and had a match, and but I think in all the sheets, because here's the thing, in all the sheets it reported that Rip Rogers had pinned me in that match, but actually I beat Rip with a flying body press off the top. And the thing was, Rip went to Bob Roop because Bob Roop was calling the finishes that night. Excuse me, and Bob Roop was calling the finishes. And Rip went to Bob and said, hey, Bob, you know, what kind of finish do you want me to use on Reno tonight for this match? And Bob Roop, I think, wanted to play a little ha-ha with Rip. He goes, no, let's let the kid go over tonight. Beat him with a flying body press, and walked out of the meeting. And I looked over at Rip and started laughing. And Rip, I don't think he appreciated that not too much. But that was the finish, but for some reason in the sheet it's reported wrong is that he beat me in that. But, you know, I just, you know, a guy that always did jobs for a living, if they do get a little ray of sunshine, at least don't misreport it.
What are your thoughts of the sheets and of the internet websites with the, as much as the business has changed? And for that matter, what are your thoughts of, you know, kayfabe is almost a thing of the past now. Well, you know, we wouldn't be doing this show in 86 for sure. Well, you know, any thoughts or opinion on that?
Well, you know, the sheets, they are what they are. Mostly, you know, I think just primarily the boys, you know, used to read the sheets, see if their name was in it or they was in any kind of scandal or mud was being slung or anything like that. Because, I mean, I grew up as a wrestling fan. I didn't know what a sheet was until I was about 3 years into the business. Once again, well-trained or just slow?
I gotta confess, it wasn't until I got into the business myself, put up a ring, where someone says, hey, look at that, and I'm thinking, wow, this just kicks the hell out of Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Let's get even more stuff in there. And it's every week. I gotta sign up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it's a double-edged sword. You know, wrestling, in my opinion, and it is my sole opinion, because Vince McMahon, he's obviously a smarter guy than I am, which it doesn't take much to be smarter than me anyway. But he's built a billion-dollar organization with his wrestling company. I wouldn't have had the vision enough to just come right out and say, hey, this is sports entertainment. We script this. We set this up. We do all that. You know, for me, it's blasphemy to even really kind of talk about it right now. And I think, but then on the other hand of it, you know, I think for fans, it's, you know, become more of a thing for them to get more involved with wrestling, to find out kind of what's going on behind the scenes. I think in a lot of instances, they give out too much information. I wish, growing up, this is the key concept that is missing in professional wrestling. It's missing over at TNA, and it's missing over at WWF, is the fact that it's no longer treated as a competition. You know, I mean, if you go to a movie, you know, and you're watching them blow up a building, you know, well, they don't show you all the behind the scenes, how they do the digital stuff, and this is fake, and that's fake, and that doesn't. You go in there to get lost in that moment of seeing Rambo blow up the building, you know. And I think, well, with professional wrestling years ago, you know, especially growing up watching Memphis and Georgia Championship Wrestling, it was about competition. It was about me saying I'm better than you, and I'm going to put your shoulders to the mat and prove it. It was about championships. You know, who growing up in life does not want to become the champion? I mean, if you're playing checkers, hopscotch, or climbing a tree, you want to be the champion. Excuse me.
Sure.
And so I think that aspect of professional wrestling has faded off. And with the small promotion that I have here in Nashville, we try to make that paramount. You know, guys are here to wrestle for titles and belts. They're wanting to wrestle because I'm better than you, and I'm going to show you that I'm better than you by putting your shoulders to the mat. And I think that concept is so old that it's new again. And that's kind of led to our success of the little promotion that we have here in Nashville called Showtime All-Star Wrestling. And so, and that's a whole, you know, story in itself, how that thing got started. But, I mean, it started out as me and a buddy of mine doing a show for cable access. And the next thing you know, one of the local networks called us and said, hey, this doggone show you got is pretty good. Think you could air it on our station? And so we said, yeah. And so then, you know, stations started coming on board with us, and then we ended up getting on the America One Network, which takes us to about 100 independent TV stations across the country. And we have Fox affiliates, we have UPN affiliates, CW affiliates across the country. And in New York, we're on in about 5 million homes, and out in L.A., we're in about 5 million homes out there. So it's, you know, like I said, it's small potatoes, but if you're looking for an alternative than the Monday Night Raws and the TNA type of programming, then if you're looking for that old, I mean, our show tries to emulate that old 1981, 82, 83 type of atmosphere. And I mean, we're not that, and we never will be that, but that is our goal.
I mean, that's the type of wrestling that we want to portray on our program.
Very good. Well, let's talk a little bit about your promotion and everything. I definitely want to get to that and want to talk about that. I've seen some of it. It's very good, very impressive, and I recommend if anyone hasn't checked out Showtime All-Star Wrestling for them to check it out. Quick question I got to ask. There's two Saws in Tennessee, I understand. One is a Southern All-Star Wrestling and one's a Showtime All-Star Wrestling. What exactly is going on with that?
Well, there is a Southern All-Star Wrestling, which was started by T.J. Weatherby up in Millersville, Tennessee. And when we started our program, we were Southern All-Star Wrestling. T.J. Basically ran the weekly house events, and we would come up once a month and tape. And then when we started to branch out and pick up more stations, we just didn't want to regionalize ourselves. So I thought, you know what, it would be best if we called the program Showtime All-Star Wrestling, because, you know, somebody in New York or New Jersey or Minnesota, they may not want to watch Southern All-Star Wrestling. The connotation that, that's a bunch of hillbillies, that's a bunch of rednecks, I don't want to watch that, you know.
I was going to say it's the same reason Southeastern changed to Continental Wrestling at one time when they were trying to get on CBS.
Exactly. And I had learned that from some television executives, to be honest with you. They said, you know, your name's kind of regionalized. You know, you may not have that type of success that you're having in the South up north, so why don't you change the name? And so that's what we did. So the television program was Showtime All-Star Wrestling, and the house events that they were running on a weekly basis was Southern All-Star Wrestling. And so we ran together for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then we branched off. They had visions of going one direction. We, of course, had visions going another direction. And no hard feelings or anything like that, you know. And, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I'm wanting to paint the picture this way. They're wanting to paint the picture another way. And, you know, not to say either one is right or wrong, just different. And so so we, you know, went out and continued to do our program. And they have an event coming up at the fairgrounds, and of course it is billed as Saw. And I've had a lot of people call me because we've built that brand over the last 3 years, and so I've had a lot of people call me about it. Marcus Pastorius is running the event. He's promoting the event, and I tell you, I think he's done a good job of touting of the wrestling. He's brought in Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee for a nostalgic type of match. I think Dutch Mantel, of course, is on the card. And a lot of our TV stars are going to be on the card. So, you know, being a former wrestler, I feel like, you know, I can't tell somebody where they can and can't perform, you know. And so I don't have any problem with it. You know, if they do great and sell the thing out, that's good for wrestling. And, you know, when Tojo trained me, you know, the thing was, you know, leave it better than you found it. And it's, you know, there's a lot of egos in the wrestling business, and there's a lot of selfishness, and there's a lot of me. But I'm not wired that way. I mean, I've, like, being in a position that you make decisions, some decisions are going to make some people happy, going to make some people mad or sad. But, you know, I'm always true and always feel like I'm loyal to the product of professional wrestling over people's feelings and emotions.
Sure. Y'all just had a big show recently with Showtime All-Star Wrestling. Y'all did a show, I believe Jackie Fargo was involved with that, and a few other promotions.
Yeah, we had an event in Laverne, Tennessee. Hardcore Wrestling Association hosted the event. They're in Laverne, Tennessee. They're there, I think, every Saturday night. And Gulas Old School Wrestling, of course, George Gulas, the son of the legendary promoter Nick Gulas. Of course, George was a longtime wrestler, former tag partner Bobby Eaton. They were called the Jet Set back in the late 70s, I think that was. And so he had a tremendous hand in promoting that event. I would pretty much defer that he was the lead promoter
on that event. HCA hosted the event there at their arena, and we contributed with adding some of our television talent to the card. Of course, the legendary Jackie Fargo was there. His brother Don Fargo. Both of those guys look like they could get in the ring right now and go with anybody they wanted to. And, of course, Bobby Eaton was there. And Gypsy Joe. I don't know if a lot of guys across the country that enjoy professional wrestling know who Gypsy Joe is. Gypsy Joe was a legendary wrestler here in the Mid-South area. Worked for Nick Gulas for many, many years. And Joe, I think, actually retired from wrestling maybe 6 months to a year ago. And I'm talking about a guy that's creeping up on 80. So Joe, big heart, gave his life to professional wrestling, and he's had some good times with the sport of pro wrestling.
Absolutely. So you definitely are still involved with Showtime All-Star Wrestling right now, because some people would thought that George Gulas, I believe he's a matchmaker on the television or something. Some people may have got a little confused on that.
Yeah, you know, it's always, you know, I'd gotten on the television. Of course, my role on television was to be the matchmaker. And, you know, and I said in the statement on television, with everything that's going on with Showtime All-Star Wrestling, I'm going to have to step back in a different role of the company and leave the matchmaking duties to George Gulas. And, of course, George used to do that years ago for his father when Gulas Promotion was one of the biggest wrestling promotions in not only the United States but all the world. They used to run 32 live events a week. Now that's running a corporation right there. And so I just, you know, there's some other things that I'm wanting to do with our company, try to expand upon the television markets that we're currently in, and also expand on where our markets are placed, not only here domestically, but internationally.
Any big markets opening up for you coming soon or anything? We'd love to see you here in Atlanta, where we're located out of.
Well, I tell you, right now it's a little early, a little premature to speculate, but we do have some contacts that we're in negotiations with in around the North Georgia area, around the Dalton area, and like I said, in North Atlanta area. So, you know, if everything goes well, I don't have a timeline or a time frame to speculate on, but I'm hoping it happens sooner than later.
Very good. Where are you staying on the promotion and everything? There's a lot of promotions in Tennessee, like you said. If you have a wrestling ring and something, well, hell, Danger's been having a mask and trying to claim he's a wrestler for years, even though he has no talent, and he'll tell you that. But you know, what would you say some of the differences? And I'm not trying to get you to trash anybody, but what are some of the differences in some of the promotions, and what does Showtime All Star Wrestling try to present? And how do y'all present differently than some of these other ones that you just brought up?
Well, I feel like there's a level of professionalism that you must obtain in class when you go in to run an event. And I mean, sometimes it's not the fault of the person that's running it. It's just, I mean, if you're running a business, some businesses are ran very well, and some businesses are ran very poorly. And also, too, the first indicator of a poorly run promotion can go, I mean, it's a two-edged sword, it can go either way. You could have, you know, talent that is not very desirable, or you could have someone running a promotion where the talent is being grossly overpaid. Now, I mean, they may have, you know, big name recognized talent there, you know, and a tremendous budget to work with, but if they're being overpaid, that promotion is not going to be in business very long. And so, I mean, I've been to wrestling events where, you know, the heaviest guy on the card is a buck 25, and he's, you know, 16 years old. And so that's not going to impress anybody. It's kind of like, you know, watching movies. You know, some movies are done very well, and some people shoot home movies in their backyard. And it's you know, that diverse with the professional wrestling. We, like I said, you know, we try to go in and present a professional product at the highest level that we can afford. Not to say that, you know, I think TNA, I think they are a very slick television program. Their production is second to none. WWE, I think, gets kind of lost on their multi-million dollar great production. Of course, it generates them great revenue, but I think the wrestling itself kind of lacks. And I think for me, the reason I've pretty much backed off and quit watching those types of programs is that the actual stories that are involved, just there's just no substance there for me. And I'm just not a fan of the mainstream wrestling anymore. I would rather watch the smaller independent cards. What's the other promotion that had a little run there on HD Network?
Ring of Honor.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to act like I was slighting those guys. I'm just, like I said, I've been hit in the head so many times I can barely remember my name. But those guys, I mean, I thought, you know, they fell into that, you know, having a nice, slick-produced program. But the substance was a little lacking, in my opinion. And, you know, those guys, they may watch our program and say, God, that's garbage. How do you guys even get on television, you know? So, you know, different strokes for different folks. You know, I think, you know, looking for that magic of what was created in the early and mid-'80s through the Memphis program and through the Georgia Championship Wrestling and even the Mid-South with Bill Watts, I think that is a period of time that will never, ever be recreated again. And unfortunately for me, that's what I grew up watching and enjoying, and it's memories now. You know, maybe somebody will come along that's a lot, you know, smarter than I am to recreate that to where it's that good again. But, I mean, back then I thought the wrestling talent was a lot better. They was more in tuned with the fans. They were better educated wrestlers and far better performers, in my opinion, because they knew, you know, how to turn it on, how to turn it off, and could get on the microphone and talk a nun out of her underwear. I mean, they could go. They were good. I mean, a lot of guys, you know, back then, you know, and then you had some elite guys that could get on the horn and really talk up a good game, you know. And I think, unfortunately, that art alone has been tremendously lost in today's professional wrestling. And again, those guys are working hard at WWE. I don't mean to knock them. And same thing at TNA. It's just my opinion.
Sure. Any guys on your shows that you're real high on, not trying to have you singling out, but feel free to mention any pieces of talent that you think we're going to see more of in the next few years. Anybody who's doing a great job as far as you're going, as far as you're concerned.
I tell you, the first name that comes to mind when you say that is a guy named Tommy Mercer. Tommy came to us. He had been on the independent scene here in the Middle Tennessee area for a little while. He's got a body like a Greek Adonis. Looks like he's carved out of granite. Just signed with TNA, I believe, about a month ago. And if he keeps his head on straight, he is big star bound. If they can use him in the correct capacity, great guy. I've always enjoyed working with Tommy. Tommy takes direction really great. When you're working with somebody like that, it's really special, and I wish nothing but the best for him. And you guys be looking for him because I think he's going to be on TNA. He's probably already, you know, been on TNA, but I think he could really be a tremendous asset for that company. Also, Chase Stevens. I think Chase Stevens is probably one of the best talents in the country right now. Just unfortunately, he's not getting a break with WWE or TNA. I think he could go toe-to-toe with any of their performers any day of the week and twice on Sundays. We've got a young kid, and this guy's probably 5-6 years from breaking into the mainstream, but it's a kid named Drew Haskins. I think Drew's only about 21 years old, been working for about 2 years, personally trained by Reno Riggin. I might throw that out there. And Drew has already been invited to one of the WWF invitation tryout situations, and went out there, turned some heads. Just the knock on him now is that he's still a young man. He's really, his body hasn't developed into becoming a man yet. And once he gets that, he is big star bound. I mean, big star bound. If given the opportunity, because he can turn it on when given the chance. Of course, we have an old salty veteran in the crew with Derek King. Derek King out of Memphis, Tennessee. Great performer. Never ever given a break. But Derek King, he can get on the horn and go. He can get in the ring and do it with the best of them.
Amazing talent.
Yeah, we've got an old salty veteran just come to us, been around here on the independent scene for quite some time, a guy named Jeff Daniels.
Sure.
Jeff doesn't have the body of a Greek god or anything, but he's got a great look, gives a great interview, and has great ring knowledge. And I'm glad that his veteran leadership is there in the locker room for some of our guys. Of course, we've got David Young. David Young's a big clown. I like him. Tremendous talent working with us. We got Shane Williams out of Knoxville, who thinks he is the king of professional wrestling. And he's, if you've never seen Shane, check him out on the internet. He's very good talent. I'm telling you, a guy that we've had in our folds, and hopefully we'll have him back pretty soon, is a guy that has really put Showtime All-Star Wrestling on the map, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention his name. I'm talking about the Maniac Mark Anthony, who I refer to as the most dangerous man in all professional wrestling. When he made his debut on our television show, he took a chainsaw and sawed through the wall of the building and busted through the. I mean, I've never seen an entrance like that before. That was. And it wasn't the. He didn't come out the entrance set. He came through a wall of the building, and so he's someone to be reckoning with. Hopefully, we'll have him back in the fold. He's taking a little time off now, letting some injuries heal up. But he will be a mainstay unless one of the bigger companies snaps him up out of our grasp. And I wish I had my list of guys to refer right now. We have a kid named Cody Melton, comes in, does a great job on the undercard. Couldn't ask for any hard worker. Reminds me a lot of myself. Comes in every day, you know, works super hard, never complains about a thing. He's the type of guys that make professional wrestling a pleasure and a privilege and a pleasure to be around in that locker room, and it makes my job easy. And I just, you know, if Cody's ever listened, you know, he's the kind of guy that doesn't get the pat on the back or doesn't get the fame or glory, but it's guys like him that keeps the company rolling, and I really do appreciate that.
Very good. I do want to ask you one quick question. Any thoughts on your tag team with Stephen Dunn of years past? And then, if we could, I want to take a caller as well. But go ahead. Any thoughts about your tag team with the Tennessee Vols with Steve Dunn?
Yeah, that was probably one of the highlights of my wrestling career, me and Steve being a tag team. It was unfortunate, you know, with Steve's passing. A little while back. But I tell you what, Steve and I, we were friends before we even became tag partners. In 1994, I think it was, we were on an Asian tour. He was teamed up with Rex King. They had me teamed up with Barry Horowitz. They were working the Head Shrinkers every night. We were working the Bushwhackers every night. And then afterwards, Steve and I, we'd, you know, get out and, you know, have a couple of beverages and just really have a good time. We enjoyed each other's company and just really had a real good friendship. And so a few years later, our paths crossed again, I think around 97, 98, somewhere in there. Can't be too specific, but that's when I think Bert Prentice started to fire up Music City Wrestling.
That's where I remember y'all from.
Yeah, yeah. And so we had, I was working across town at another promotion for my good friend Tony Falk. He was running a promotion called New South. Excuse me. I'm not even a smoker. and so I was working for my good friend Tony Falk, and Steve was asked to come over and work for Bert Prentice at the Music City Wrestling. Of course, at the time I was starting to get back in wrestling. I was married in 95 and kind of wanted to curtail my dates down a little bit because I was enjoying the married life, and you know, the road was starting to get long. And so, but then about late 96, early 97, I got that itch again to, I guess resurrect my career. And so, I'd gotten tremendous shape, probably the best shape I'd ever been in my life. And, started, working, you know, over at Music City Wrestling with, Steve, and, Steve and I were both baby faces. And at the time, mm-hmm. You had a Colorado kid and a young kid named Stalin Shane Eaton and a few other young, cute guys. And I was no longer young and cute. So I looked over at Steve and I said, you know, you're not that cute yourself. I said, why don't we go and get in the heel locker room, figure out a way to be heels, and, you know, we'll have a good time. So he said, yeah, that'll be fine. We did an angle where he and I were in a six-man tag, and we ended up jumping the Shane Eaton, and then the Tennessee Vols was born. And, I didn't even know what we were going to be called. I'm walking back to the locker room after we had, you know, left Shane Eaton there in the ring, and Bert Prentice gets on the microphone. He says, now on, they want to be known as the Tennessee Vols. And I thought, where did he come up with that garbage? But I tell you, it was ingenious because it stuck. And kind of one of the things on our interviews was that at the time when he named us that, Tennessee had, I think, went to a bowl game that year and got beat in the bowl game, you know, or something. And so I got on there and did an interview and I said, you know, unlike those bunch of imposters over in Knoxville, these balls don't choke in the big game. And of course that was the thing that kind of kicked it off for us. And so after that, Steve and I, you know, really kind of honed in to becoming a good tag team. He had learned tag team wrestling in Portland under Lynn Denton, who, if you've ever heard of Lynn Denton, was one of the grapplers.
Absolutely.
He held Lynn in such high regard. I myself have never met Lynn. Still to this day, I've never met Lynn. But I hold him in high regard because a lot of the stuff that we did, we stole from those guys. And so,
Lynn did it, Tony Anthony. What a team.
yeah. And so there's no sense in reinventing the wheel. Just, take the path less traveled there, I guess, you know. And so
what does Cornette say? Plagiarism is stealing from one person when you steal from many, it's research.
Exactly. And that's, you know, everybody. That's how the business has evolved, you know. Hi, Dad. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
That's how the business has evolved
over the years.
I was going to say that I wish one of the bigger organizations would pick you guys up, because when you had you and Steve and Debbie Combs, I thought that was one heck of a group right there. And Princess D, there you go. But I don't know. I tell you, it's just the way it works out and everything. Can we take a caller here, Rita?
Sure. Go ahead.
770 area code. I think you know who this is. Larry Goodman, is that you?
It is me.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Reno. A pleasure to speak to you as always.
Yes, sir.
A couple questions. You know, you're running down some of the guys on your roster, and maybe I missed it, but I was curious on your thoughts on two other guys, Ryan Genesis and Shane Williams.
Oh, yeah. I'd mentioned Shane a little while ago, but, yeah, Ryan Genesis, he is a tremendous raw talent, I believe. He's got a great look, good learner, great attitude. He's somebody that, you know, if he sticks with it, that's the thing, you know. It happened to me, and it happened to a lot of guys in the wrestling industry, that after a while you kind of get bored with where you're at in the business, and you think, you know, nothing is going to change for you, and you know, eventually, you know, it's going to, you know, things are going to get better, things are going to change, but Ryan Genesis, if he can stay focused, and you know, he will make it. He's got talent. You know, some guys, you know, look like $1 million and don't have any talent, and you know, that's just the way it is. But he's got a passion for it, and sometimes, you know, you can tell if a guy's going to make it or not by how passionate they are about something. And but he's always, you know, coming up, you know, wanting to know, you know, what he can do to improve, you know, what, how to make himself better. Guys that already know it all, they're never going to get better. You know, that's just the way it is. I mean, every day you learn something new in the wrestling business. Every day you do. And the day that you think you know everything, that's the day you need to start doing something else.
And coming all the way from Texas to do the Saw shows.
Yes, he is. And I'm very appreciative. Very appreciative of his talents.
I tell you,
we was talking earlier about how guys will you know, go all over the country for peanuts just for an opportunity, and so you know, it's you know, some guys, you know, they feel like they need to be paid quite a bit more, and you know, the thing, my thought of it is, what have you done yet in this business to deserve that pay raise? You know, and a lot of them can't say anything. You know, that's the sad part of it, you know. But it's just the law of the land now. It's just the nature of the beast. It's the way the business is, you know, unfortunately.
I was curious, too, about the circumstances of the return of Kid Cash, in the sense of him taking up the cause of finding the person who stole the Saw equipment and videotapes.
Yeah, this ought to be pretty interesting, because I think a lot of people, you know, kind of had written Cash, you know, totally off the program, and of course he had some time off, but I think he's going to come back in a big way on the program, probably in a capacity people don't expect, and you know, I think that's just a good. Good way for a person to have longevity, you know, is to bring something back that you totally don't expect.
So,
I'm actually looking forward to that as well.
And maybe then we haven't seen the last of the story between you and he. I would gather from your meeting in the ring in Columbia that there's still more to be told here in this story.
Yeah. I mean, up to this point, everything that we have done has just been the introduction. The only thing we've done is just set the table and name the players. That's about all we've done at this point.
Now, I wanted to ask you quickly about your upcoming plans here. I know you're back at the stadium in the 12th of February for TV taping. Is that going to be a regular thing? Is that a one-time shot at the stadium?
No. We're going to try to make that a regular thing over there. I've talked to Tony Falk and Bill DeShields over at the Stadium Inn, and those guys have welcomed us in with open arms, and I think it'll be a win-win for everybody involved. We we were taping down there in Columbia with the Whiteheads, and they folded up. They had called Freddie Morton the other night and said they were closing up shop. And so they pretty much lost their lease on the building down there. And I tell you, I had a good time working with those folks down there, the Whiteheads. I have nothing but tremendous respect for those people. Usually in professional wrestling, if something doesn't go the way everybody plans it, it's always, well, that dirty SOB this, and that son of a gun that, and da-da-da-da. But it was never that way. It was just he was in a losing proposition. He was trying to run two towns a week, probably within, 40 miles of each other. And that's just hard these days. I mean, that is a full-time job times two, trying to fill up a building, on a Friday and Saturday night. And they just had their work cut out for them, and I think they got a little bit overwhelmed. And so it's just an unfortunate. He's a nice man. He's an honest man, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. But it just didn't work out.
How about Ripley? I know you guys were going to run over there, and then there was a problem with the guy who the building owner or promoter there. Is you still hope to do something in the Ripley area?
Yeah, possibly so. Maybe at that same building, but. I mean, we're keeping the options open there. I'm thinking about going to Jackson, Tennessee as well.
Oh.
And possibly two or three other towns on the horizon. So I kind of liked, when we had a few more dates for the guys to hone their skills. And I think there's enough promoters, If, what I would like to see is a network of promoters come together and promote towns based off of our television. I think we've probably got the best talent in the area to use, and wouldn't it make sense to use the talent that's on TV and use those guys and advertise your product on our TV program? It can be done so that everybody benefits. It's not just a one-sided proposition. I think if you can do a win-win, then that's you just can't ask for anything better than that.
Lastly, I wanted to touch on your returning to the fairgrounds on May 7th and what brought that about. And I mean, I know that obviously the city made it possible in the sense of that the fairgrounds is going to stay open, but is that a one shot, or is that you plan to come back there more frequently since the fairgrounds is going to be open for a while?
Yeah. The thing was, the fairground has been in limbo here in Nashville for the past year and a half, and it's still nothing had been decided upon. I called some people that I know that are politically connected here in Nashville, and I says, what's going on with the fairgrounds? And before the big news came out, a couple of years before that came out, I probably had a few weeks on that. And so I knew that it wasn't going to close. So for us, there was no rush. And, we need to, get in there and do this, that, and the other, And I've had a great time there. I don't ever have any regrets running the fairgrounds. I probably have, more memories than some, not as many as most. We're going to run an event out there in, when is the event?
May 7th is what your website says.
Yeah, May. Yeah, I just got home. I didn't have my book in front of me, and I'm horrible with dates, so. I usually leave all that up to Paul Adams. Paul generally handles all the dates for us.
Since you mentioned Paul Adams, could you talk a little bit about his role in the way things have unfolded and where Saw is at now as compared to where it was a couple years back?
Paul is kind of he's the pulse of the company. He pushes me when I need to be pushed. He doesn't ever return anybody's calls, but that's just Paul. I hear that a lot from everybody. Well, I call him, he don't ever call me back. That's part of it. When you're getting pulled at 100 different directions every day, you don't always have time to call people back, he kind of sometimes acts as a buffer for me when I, I've got too much on my plate. Because I still, my main job is to be a husband and a dad. Wrestling is probably 27th, at this point in my life. but Paul, single guy, wrestling's number one, of which I'm glad. I like to be around people that are passionate about professional wrestling, and I like to be around people that have the same perspective of professional wrestling that I have. And so, Paul is, probably the last 4 months or better, Paul has ran everything 100%. I've just kind of been in the background taking care of a few things. And I had some health issues that I'm dealing with right now. And so Paul handles the day-to-day operations. And Paul's basically, running everything right now. But hopefully... I'll be back in the swing of things here for long, and we'll be back up. Not that we've slowed down or anything. It's kind of like life. If you're sprinting all the time, you don't have time to catch your breath or look at the map or anything. Sometimes you better slow down and look at the map, because if you don't, you're going to get lost. And so we've kind of just been in a good holding pattern. I feel like, not moving, forward at the speed of light at one point that we were moving, but, still not moving back. And then sometimes you have to take two steps back to take a step forward, But, the thing is, there's always the naysayers out there that, they're done for now. I told you they're done for now. And these are generally the people that have never done anything with Russell. I just encourage people, if you can do it, then go do it, live it. Show me how good you can do it. Show me how much better you can do it. For me, it's not a, hey, I can do it better than anybody else, because if I was doing that, then I would probably just need to quit right now, because I'm never going to be as good at doing this as Vince McMahon, monetarily wise, production wise. Any marketing, it's just not going to happen. But I'm having fun, doing it. I'm having fun doing what I do. When I wrestled, I wasn't always the best wrestler on the card, by any stretch of the imagination, But I enjoyed doing it. I might go out there and mess up a few high spots, But I enjoyed doing it. And I don't understand why there's just, it seems like with guys, a lot of times there's so much criticism and jealousy and not enough positive reinforcement and not enough encouragement from other guys. I don't know. It's just, I've had a lot of people. I'd called my good friend Hammerjack today, and I told him, I said, I wanted to wish Marcus, because I'd sent Marcus an email today. And I just wanted to tell those guys, hey, I'm in your corner. It's a lot of people don't know the struggles that you're having to go through to try to pull an event off like this. And I don't want you to think, that there's animosity with me or anything like that, because, you've got the gumption enough to go out and try to do it, And if you succeed, then you deserve all the credit, And so I just wanted to clear the air with those guys to let them know I'm not, I don't thrive on negativity. I can't stand negativity. If I can't be positive, then I'll just divorce myself of the whole situation. But I just called them guys to wish them good luck this weekend.
Well, it'd be my thought that if they have a successful show, just like when you had a successful show at the fairgrounds, that only helps all of Nashville independent wrestling. It doesn't, you know, that only helps everyone if it's a good quality show that's put on there, and the fans that come have a good time.
Exactly. I mean, that is good for wrestling, you know. And you know, when I first started with Saul, I would always tell guys, I am loyal to this product. I am loyal to professional wrestling. You know, and if somebody does something good in the wrestling business, because there's, Lord knows, there's so much negativity out there. There's so much backstabbing. There's so much this, so much that, and so much heel nipping that if somebody does something positive, hey, applaud them. Pat them on the back. Encourage them to do it again. You know, for me, it's kind of baffling sometimes, but that's how I feel.
Well, if Nashville promoters
spend
as much time working together trying to figure out how they could work together and put on good shows rather than tearing each other down, the whole business would be further ahead. I mean, it's not that Nashville is unique in that way, but there seems to be an awful lot of that in Nashville.
I agree. You know, and I try to just stay away from all that. You know, it's, you know, hey, they can you know, maybe say this about me behind my back, right? As long as they don't come up to my face, you know, and attack me, you know, it's just words, you know. I told someone today, I said, you know, I said, I'm 44 years old. I'm not going to go up and punch somebody or pick a fight or, you know, hopefully I'm beyond that at this point in my life, you know. If I've got a problem with somebody, I'll go and sit down with them and address it at that point. But if we can't work it out, then we just can't work it out, you know. But hopefully we can and become friends and allies.
Well, as I've said before, you know, I'm amazed at the quality of product that Showtime puts out, given the, you know, the limited dollars that are available to produce what you do. I think it's really quite an amazing product for the amount of money available to put it out. So I just wanted to say congratulations again to you for that. And hey, I hope your health situation gets squared away.
I wish you
the best with that.
Thank you. I feel like you kind of, you know, have a good pulse on what you know what's going on in wrestling. And I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Sure. And Dave, thanks for letting me participate. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks all the time. Be sure to join us next week. We announced earlier Wildcat Wendell Cooley coming on, Kyle Matthews in another week. Always thanks for your participation, Mr. Larry Goodman. Appreciate you always.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. I'll tell you right now, Reno, this is one heck of an interview. I really do appreciate you coming on. One thing I was going to ask you as well, any thoughts about your time in the USWA, and especially any thoughts on a man who recently passed, Mr. Guy Coffey?
You know what? I was going to mention a little something on that. Mr. Coffey was always a pro, very, very nice, always greeted you. Always greeted you with respect and a smile. It's going to be sad with his passing, but with being there in Memphis, always had good memories. For me, I knew it was a learning experience. When I was there, wasn't making much money, but some of the road trips with Dutch Mantel and Tony Falk and Eric Embry and Brickhouse Brown and guys like that. Let me tell you, you couldn't have bought that kind of entertainment anywhere in the world.
Oh, you must share some of this wonderful goodness right now. Please share a little bit of some of that, please. What you can't share that is.
Well, I tell you what, I love Dutch Mantel to death. Dutch was the booker at the time that hired me in Memphis, and didn't know me from Adam, just booked me on a recommendation. Somebody put in a good word for me, and I was there. And very first night I'm there, Chris Champion we're at a spot show somewhere, and so I get there early, and you know, I'm got dressed and ready to go on and stuff, and Dutch looks at me, he goes, "What can you do?" I says, "Well, I don't know." And he says, "Well, at least you're honest." So Chris Champion comes in. And of course, Chris comes in, you know, a little late. He had had a girlfriend that he had to go get a free ticket for, and there was a hassle because they didn't want to give him a free ticket because the promotion was lean on money back then. So so he had, you know, so him and Dutch are getting into a shouting match back there in the locker room, right? So as they're yelling at one another, I'm sitting over here on this bench, and Dutch says, "Go ahead and get dressed. You're on second with this guy right here. See ya." And so that was my introduction to Chris Champion. So I'm sitting there thinking, wow, we're getting ready to have a great match. Here he comes in all pissed off. And he goes, "Well, what do you want me to do with this guy?" And he goes, "I want you to go 15 minutes Broadway with him." He goes, "Broadway?" He goes, "You don't even know this guy." So I'm sitting there looking at him, and I'm going, I'm sitting right here, you know. And so, but Chris and I went out there and tore down the house for 15 minutes, and after that became good friends. And so that was my first day in Memphis, and I tell you, you know, we weren't making any money, but you know, like I said, the memories were for me. They were you couldn't put a price tag on it. It was great. Bill Dundee taught me a lot about the wrestling business. Taught me a lot of how to be a babyface. You know, and I think that's one of the things that's kind of lost is that the veteran guys taking some of the younger guys under their wing and coaching them up when they see that they have a passion for wrestling. You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys that come through, and some guys, you know, it's all me. And of course, in some instances, you kind of have to be that way. But when they see a guy that, you know, needs a little help and wants a little help, and can coach them along, I think that's one of the things that's kind of missing with the wrestling of today, with some of the, because I mean, going to a lot of locker rooms, there's not that many veterans. I mean, everybody's still, you know, about the same level. You know, you may have one or two guys in there, but for the most part, you know, depending on which locker room you're in, you know, there's guys that are, you know. Heck, you could probably, you know, have 10 guys on the card, and all 10 of them haven't had 5 matches each. You know, it's just the way it is.
Indeed, indeed. Any stories about Brickhouse Brown or Eric Emery or anybody else on there?
Well, there's always a story that I tell about Dutch. And Eric Embry was in the car with me, and it was me, Tony Falk, Eric. And Dutch hates it when I tell this story, and I don't say it because I'm trying to be a little Dutch. I love Dutch. Dutch is my man. But this is a funny story. I may have to hold off on this one until another time. Maybe on our next interview, I'll give you that one. That'll be a good one. That'll be a good
cliffhanger. We definitely will for sure have you back right there for that. You better watch you one up in his third book and everything. And you know he's going to come up with another one. He's got two to do down. There's at least another one to go and all, for
See, that's what I'm afraid of. See, I'm afraid I'm going to tell this story on the Internet, and it's going to get back to him, and then I'm going to end up in one of the books and not such a pleasant story about me. So I'm kind of picking and choosing my spots here.
Well, that's what you got. How about this? Any thoughts of Smoky Mountain Wrestling?
I loved Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Smoky Mountain Wrestling was great. I wished it was still around. I enjoyed it. I felt like if I had been there longer, I probably would have gotten a great opportunity. But New York called me back, and I went back to WWF, but I loved Smoky Mountain. Loved working for Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette, I grew up, he was one of my childhood idols. And I don't say that to date him or anything. He's probably maybe 10 years older than me, I guess. But, you know, I was a teenager when he was a young sprout in the wrestling business, and always enjoyed his performances, always enjoyed his his view on pro wrestling. I think he has a great wrestling mind. He's somebody I'd like to sit down with and pick his brain, you know, as far as, you know, what to do when you're running a promotion. Because Smoky Mountain, I mean, he had his finger on the pulse of that company right there, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for Jim Cornette. Always felt kind of good. Always felt kind of good when he had asked for me at the WCW tapings when he was managing the Midnight Express. And because he would kind of come in and kind of handpick the guys he wanted Bobby and Stan to work with so that they would go out and have a good performance on television. And for me, that was kind of a badge of honor that he sought me out to do that. And so, you know, some of these guys, they do things and say things they really don't realize the impact it has on people. But for me, that tremendously impacted me, because when he came to me and specifically asked for me to be in that match, there was no way I was going to let him down, you know. And it just made me want to do just that much more and be that much better for him. So a tremendous amount of thanks to Jim Cornette.
Certainly. We had one line drop off. So they didn't call us for Reno Riggins for a little bit longer. Real quickly, just one other thing I was going to say. You've been around here. Let's see here. 615 area code. 615 area code. You're on the line with Dave Danger and Reno Riggins. Hello. State your name and where you're calling from, please. Hello? 615 area code.
I guess they didn't have something to say.
Sometimes it happens that way. I was going to ask you real quick. You've seen a lot of guys come and go and everything, but did you ever see, and if you want to bypass this, feel free to, but I'm just interested, did you ever see, I guess, a can't-miss prospect that you just knew this guy was going to go up and, you know, get a major role or something in a promotion or something, a can't-miss prospect that for whatever reason, his own doing, wrong place, right, wrong time, that didn't, can't-miss prospect that didn't?
You know, I tell you, there was so many guys when I was at WWE that basically me, Brooklyn Brawler, Barry Horowitz, Dusty Wolf would go out and basically have the tryout matches with these upcoming prospects. And, you know, they would, you know, we would go out there and I worked very first match that Duke the Dumpster Drosy ever had in WWF was with me. And I came back and they said, well, what's your evaluation? And so so here I am, wanting the opportunity that these guys are getting, but yet I'm the one that has to evaluate this guy's performance. So imagine being in that position. So it's kind of one maybe a slap in the face, you know, but two, and also two, you know, you're kind of being honored. So see, I'm not very smart, and so I'm sitting here thinking, well, you know what? His performance was okay, but wasn't as good as mine. Why? How come I'm not up for this position? You know, and so I didn't ever say that. You know, and you pretty much kind of knew if the guy had it or not. You know, if they were going to do something with him or not. You know, I was there when Undertaker came in there, and Vince was foaming at the mouth. He didn't even have to have a tryout match. You know, so imagine you go out there having a tryout match with Undertaker, you know, and Vince is already foaming at the mouth, and you come back and give him a bad evaluation. Imagine where you would be at next, you know. So you kind
of
had to
understand. We wish
Reno
the best of luck. We wish Reno the best of luck in his future endeavors.
Exactly, exactly. And so you kind of had to have your eyes, you know, looking around, who am I working with tonight? And then, you know, you'd find that out about, you know, 5 o'clock or something. Okay, what's the story with this guy? Who knows him? Who got him up here? You know, and so you're basically doing a turn paper before 8 o'clock to find out who this guy was, to know basically what kind of valuation you're going to give before you even go out there. Same thing with Sonny and Chris Candido. Now, I went out there and, you know, I'm getting ready to go. And I had been at the company for quite a while now when they came on the scene. And they came in there, and they was telling me what all they were going to do in their match, you know. And,
oh.
And so I was sitting there, and I said, okay, that's good. I go, who are you going to do this with? He said, well, I'm working you. I said, well, like I said, who are you going to do this with? And so I said, look, I said, I know you guys are up for a position here. You wouldn't be here. And, of course, Vince, he was foaming at the mouth at Sonny. So no matter what kind of match we had to go out there and do, they were going to be hired, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So went out there, got through the match. I didn't think very much of the match. I liked Chris, who just he was different. Kind of didn't see the rest of the world, I guess, as the world was happening. And so, unfortunate for him. But they were hired, and but not to discount his talent or anything like that, you know. But it just he got educated too with some of the older guys too when he came in and started saying what all he's going to do in his matches. And Chris wasn't that
uh-huh.
way. It was mostly Sonny doing the barking. I didn't take too kindly to that, but, you know, who am I, right? So, and then the first match, Adam Bomb, you know, Adam Bomb, first match you ever had was with me. Earthquake, first match you ever had with me. I went on the road with him. I had to work him every night before we went on television. So that when he made his appearance on television, it was an impressive one. And so I worked with him every night. And not that I was coaching him or anything like that, you know, but George the Animal Steel and Rene Goulet and Chief Jay Strongbow, they were all in his ear trying to get his character developed. And he was having trouble. He goes, you know, what's an earthquake do? I mean, we were sitting back there one day. He goes, what's an earthquake do? I said, well, earthquake shakes, you know, ground shakes. The whole thing shakes, you know. And so we're sitting there trying to figure out something, you know. And so probably about third or fourth night in, I can't remember, he did a deal where he'd slam me or something, you know, and he was standing next to me in the ring, and he jumped. And when he did, I about sprung about 3 feet off the mat, you know. And he's standing there, and I go, do that again. And so he did it again, and I bounced again. So I said, well, keep doing it. So he would do the thing, and that's how he would set up that doing that earthquake thing. And next thing you know, his finish was formed. And, you know, got to the TV, and, you know, everybody thought that was, you know, Cat's Meow. And little help by Reno Riggins helping to develop that. So I was kind of happy about that.
What would you say your crowning achievement in WWE? WWE was. What would you say you may not get on the ice cream bar, but, you know, what would you say that was your crowning achievement?
It's easy. It's easy. One weekend, Saturday at 1 o'clock, I performed at the Boston Garden, sold out. Who was it on top? I think it was, I know who was on top. It was Yokozuna and Undertaker was on top, sold out Boston Garden. I grew up here in Nashville as a Larry Bird fan, okay? So grew up here in Nashville as a Larry Bird fan. I always, you know, saw those games from the Boston Garden, you know? And so Saturday at 1 o'clock, I'm laying there on my back, looking up, counting all the banners while I'm being pinned by Virgil. And I'm sitting there thinking, I didn't get any better than this. But then at 4 o'clock, we go to the airport, get on the company Lear jet, go to New York City, and do Madison Square Garden that night. So that was for me, I thought, man, I'm living the rock star lifestyle, you know. And then the next day we did the same thing. We did two events. We did and I grew up, you know, calling when you go to a wrestling card, calling it an event. I hate the term show, but that seems to be the word of choice for guys. But Tojo always told me, he said, it's an event. If you want to go to a show, you go see Wayne Newton in Vegas. That's a show. But he said, this is an event. And so there's a difference. And so I was always taught that. And so when I hear guys today, and it's just, you know, a pet peeve of mine, you know, but that's kind of the way things go. But for me, the crowning jewel, not to get off subject there, was to do Boston Garden, Madison Square Garden, Maple Leaf Garden, and I think Joe Louis Arena in one weekend. And then I think a few months after that, WrestleMania 9 at Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so I mean it's I put a thing on my Facebook today that you know, through my life I feel like I've been very fortunate. I've traveled the world. I've wrestled the who's who of professional wrestling, and I seem like I've been pretty fortunate in my life. But last week was the crowning moment of my life, because my son came home with straight A's on his report card, and I've never been more proud of anything in my whole entire life than that right there. I've got an 8-year-old boy, and I've got a 4-year-old boy, and I was never so proud of anything in my whole entire life, because my son last year had had some trouble, and we finally got him diagnosed and got him right. And for him to accomplish that is greater than anything that I've ever accomplished in my life. So for the struggles that he had to be able to get to that point, for me, it's just that's the true heart of a champion. So I put that on my Facebook today, and I was really extremely proud. I mean, I've I didn't walk around with the WWF hardware or anything like that, you know. But for me, I feel like all the accomplishments that I've had, that was the greatest of all so far.
Sure thing, I tell you. Danger and I, a few years back, used to do Champion of the Week and Jobber of the Week. I think we're going to go ahead and make your son Champion of the Week, straight A's. And, Al Reno, we got to make you Jobber of the Week, no doubt about it, because, hey, you were jerking the stars for so long, man. That was great.
All right. Well, I appreciate that.
Not a problem. I was going to say, we're getting low on time. Hey, I want you to go ahead and promote. You are a promoter. Promote Saw. Tell us where we can see it, where we can watch it, where we can buy tickets, where we can find the information if we don't know, and if we don't know, why we should.
Well, I tell you what, where you can get a lot of that information, if you just go to Saw, SAWonline.tv. Once again, that is SawOnline.tv. And you can get a lot of information from our website. And I believe pretty soon we're going to have where you can watch the program from our website. And actually, we're going to try to put the whole entire library on there, so that, you know, if you're just now getting in tune with what Showtime All-Star Wrestling is, you might be able to catch it from episode, you know, one and follow the progression, you know, because I think we've done over 188 episodes at this point, so that's quite a bit, quite a bit of wrestling to watch. Our program is an hour long of television time, so it's actually about 44-46 minutes run time, and unlike some of the other promotions, we wrestle. we don't have a lot of talk on the program. I mean, we try to you know, fill up the time with actual in-ring action. And, you know, whereas I hear there's a kind of a backlash of just too much talking on the big promotions. So that's kind of our thing.
Well, fantastic. I tell you, we're running almost straight out of time. I want to thank you for being a guest of the show. We're definitely going to have you back, if nothing else, to hear the Dutch Mantel story you're not telling today.
Exactly.
Danger, any quick words yet? Woohoo! Great guest. Danger's a big fan, but he had nothing to say. And like I said, you said a mouthful, and we appreciate you coming on the show. For the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, for Mark Danger, and for our guest, Rena Wiggins, I'm Dave Wills. Join us next week with Wildcat Wendell Cooley and the weekender Raquel Matthews right here on the David Danger Show. Good night.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.